Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work. How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Okay, one, two, three.
Sorry.
Well,
Kathy just noshed.
Did you just forget?
I clapped and then I realized it wasn't loud enough, so I clapped again myself.
Perfect.
And then I was like, well, that makes no sense.
Have fun with that in the edit.
Okay, can we try that one more time? One, two, three. Great.
Beautiful.
Happy. Gorgeous. I'm in a box. I'm very excited. First of all, how are you? And secondly, I'm excited about what I'm going to tell you.
Oh, right. Love it.
I'm
better
great.
Now that I hear that you're excited. I'm really excited.
I forgot to tell you. I'm trying to speak quite calmly because I'm in the sound booth and there's another recording going on, so I'm not going to sound like myself today. But I will tell you in this lovely sultry tone that I booked a fuckload of Botox yesterday, like an offensive amount of Botox into my face for the first time, hitting up every single area of my face. I'm not going to be able to move it at all.
Oh my God, Cathy, give us a tour of the face. Where are you getting? What are you getting?
So the plan is I'm going to get it between the eyebrows, which is the only thing I actually really wanted to get done. But then when I was on the website, I was introduced to something called gummy smile Botox, which is where they relax the muscles around.
Gummy smile Botox. Very technical term. Gummy smile.
Yeah. So where they relax the muscles around your mouth so that you can't see your gums when you smile. And then I was like, whilst we're down there, we might as well slim up the face with a bit of the jaw Botox.
What about a bit of lip filler as you're at it, if you're down there?
If we can remember back to circa 2018, I tried lip injections and they did not suit me.
Did we ever get a picture of that?
We don't have a picture of that. We have a picture when I experimented with the Kylie lip plumping thing.
That's true.
And I will share that with you.
The chat. Somebody, the host, has disabled my video, I presume as an act of passive aggression.
Of vengeance. That was me. I disabled my all the video. My own video. I must have disabled it all. Hang on.
It's fine. I mean,
did I do that?
I like looking at you guys. It's probably for the best that I can't see me.
I'm just trying. Guys, I'm trying not to see myself for my own.
Oh, hide self. Hi. Yeah. I do love
You're
a hide
beautiful,
self.
Jennifer.
Pardon me.
Any like kind of low key creeps of the week? Because some of the bigger, heavier creeps of the week are just too much.
Way too heavy. I agree. Fucking and again, way too heavy. Creeps of the yeah. There's a lot of hardcore creeps of the week that we should just glaze right over.
I think it's and too instead, depressing. It's very it depressing, and people come here for a bit of escapism. It's not our. It's not our remit. I suppose
to start video. You got? Are you back?
Nah, it's grand. Oh yeah, here we go. Asking me to start.
Sorry, sorry about that.
It's a problem.
I have to say, it's absolutely sick. I got to give myself and looking at ourselves on a screen the creeps of the week.
Yeah.
Are you?
But I'm not going to look like this for much longer.
You're not going to look like
not
that
after
for much
the
longer.
21st of April.
Maybe that's yeah. what we should all be doing.
Different.
So, is it open again on the 21st of April?
From what I can gather, it's open now because this is a medical necessity. The jaw thing is for those who clench your jaw. So I actually do clench my jaw an awful lot. Now, spade is spade. That's not the reason I booked it. I booked it for aesthetic reasons. But if I can get by in telling people it's because I clench my jaw, then I shall.
Yes. You deserve this.
I just want to be
You're the
gorgeous.
Creep of the week.
I'm worried
yeah,
about
I am.
You, Cass.
I am.
We're not going to be able to recognize you.
No, that's the plan.
Okay. okay. Any personal creeps of
COVID
the week?
Cop. Personal creeps. No, I've just been wading through my own creeps in my own list of, you know how you save things as they come in. And I had been saving a thing that I thought, Cassie, you would do. It kept coming in on the week it was announced in the news into our DMs. And I was like, betcha Cassie will do that. And it was,
I don't have the
details. One of us needs to do it. It happened in China and it's a woman getting married to her betrothed gentleman who... Like, and then the day of the wedding, or around the same time, her mother discovers that it's her long lost sibling.
Yeah, I heard this sibling.
Wow, so that's a close blood relative,
isn't it? Wow. And I haven't even done a top line. Have you? Did you even come across this?
No,
I only came across it in the last day or two. People
yeah,
sent it on to me.
Oh, fucking hell, it's not my creep this week, so I don't have the information, but.
Jesus,
we'll come back and
teaser.
Do a proper one.
Creep
somebody
tease.
Said in the DMs as well, and they're probably right, it's that one child rule that's come around and fucked every... Oh my God, sorry, the photograph of Cassie's lips has just come in.
Oh, I have
Yeah, it's seen. Gorgeous.
Here we go.
Cassie, who am I looking
that's
at?
I'm not getting lip fillers anymore.
Sorry.
I'm getting Botox.
Am I looking at lip fillers?
No, that's the Kylie Jenner lip. You remember the lip
oh, the
thingy
sucking.
Where you just suck
you
on
suck
a thingy?
On the end of a bottle. I remember doing that as a kid.
But the lip
Do you remember that? You suck
did
like, resistance. Cassie, this looks exactly how many who have taken the lip filler just a shade too far. And I'm not one to judge because I desperately want them. But you know the way, like, if they've gone a bit, like, you know, to the 2.5 mil up and down, that can lead to a bit of...
But I'm not doing that. I'm just relaxing... Mouth. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to relax the muscles around my mouth so that you cannot see my gums when I smile. And then that coupled with my new brand that I shall not mention, oral hygiene kit, is going to be fucking gorgeous.
You sound
I've been
like you're already
looking
under
at myself.
The influence of some kind of relaxant.
I'm just trying to be quiet so that somebody else can record a podcast next
Your
time.
Your podcast
sabotaging
is the best one.
Yes.
Yes, sabotage the other ones. Set fire to the rest.
Okay.
I love them all equally.
This, like, shy talk is pretty
interesting.
Great. It's all gold.
No,
all
I want to get on
no
and
filler.
Tell you my story because I've got a great story this week.
Can I do a Cassie. Tiny bit of patron pluggage?
Oh, yeah, please.
Yeah,
because our patrons are coming in thick and fast. We love to see you. Little reminder that you get a personal email from me, Sophie Creep White, when you sign up. Alerting you to the fact that there's a beautiful gift en route, a tote, a creep tote featuring Lawn Chair Larry for everyone who signs up to our Patreon and access to over a year's worth of additional patron content. Like, you may never touch the bottom of that content swamp.
You may never scrape the barrel.
You
like
could
we
genuinely,
have.
It could never fit. It could see you out in terms of COVID. Like,
well, I'll tell you this much. I got a comment about all the content.
Oh,
and the comment was, it's too much.
Too much.
Too much.
I got that comment too from somebody else.
Really?
Too much.
Like, well, so maybe should we remedy just this right away?
Like,
by throwing out those two people. You don't have to consume it all, is the thing. It's just there should you need it. Long drive, walk in the park.
You never know when you're going to go into a 48-hour labor with a baby and you'll be glad of it then, won't you?
You never know. There's rarely warning.
Just don't navigate away from the Patreon browser when you're in labor. It'll stop playing.
Speaking of the Patreon, Cassie, have you locked me out of the Patreon? I'm just trying to log in.
I haven't done anything.
So I can shout out to some of our brand new... Oh God, it's not letting me in.
Nope.
Anyway, look, all I want to say is that, you know, you're joining.
Oh, we did have an Isabella. An Isabella yesterday.
Good name.
Did we? I love seeing the kind of great names coming in. I love seeing an international address. I swear to God, it's not letting me back in. Is it tortoise.com or .ie?
Sophie White. It has been years. IE.
Okay.
It has been years we've been doing this.
Yeah, I know. But you and all your ridiculous and problematic, I might add, passwords, emails.
Absolutely.
It's just Cassie at tortoise.ie. And as we well know, the password is...
Okay, here we go. We have some amazing new names on our Patreon page. We've got an Angelica, an Isabella, got Philip, Leisha, Jen, Laura, Hillary, Caroline.
There can be only one
Leslie,
Jen.
Lucy, Claire, Grace, Natasha. I mean, just in the last... I'm still 48 hours. The last few days. Lads, welcome aboard. Thank you so much. I'll be slip sliding on into your email address and sending you out a lovely little tote.
So
and,
here's another thing I want to say about
end
the totes
of chilling
you
the patron.
Receive.
That's Patreon Corner.
In order for us to actually gain a profit from your patronage, you must stay longer as a patron than four
Jen,
months. You must stay with us.
Jen, for fuck's sake. This is an idea that hasn't occurred to them and you're obsessed with it.
What do you,
you
mean?
You are giving them the idea that you're afraid
it.
They will do.
Sorry. Your business over here. So our lifetime value per customer needs to be 4 months, guys. Please don't let us down.
Don't let us down.
Moving on. We do have a very exciting merch announcement. The merch is back. Well, we've got some new items, or no, old items are back again in stock. So wanted to put it out there that if you are purchasing some Creep Jive merch from talltales.ie/merch.
merch.
And you want to buy a gift like a beanie or a Creep of the Week mug or a tote for a friend or loved one, you can also request a personalized message from us, your favorite creeps. And so we will.
And get in there and do it now, because from next week I won't be able to move my face and deliver it.
So basically, cameo style, you can tell us it's for your friend Dawn and she has an awesome arse.
This cracks me
up. And then we'll say, we'll make a little message for Dawn and her arse and be like, you know, your body's too creepalicious for you, babe, or whatever.
I don't know. That's giving me chills. Is new levels.
Okay.
This is great.
Okay. Shill corner over. What
have
we got?
There's a new series on Netflix. We all immediately have to watch it. And I just watched the first episode last night. I can't believe I hadn't heard about this before. It's a fucking art heist. It took place St. Patrick's Day, 1990, in Boston. I'm going to give you the lowdown without doing any spoilers.
Okay.
Oh, gorgeous. I also inspired by the release of a new HBO documentary. I'm going deep on an incredible story, which I've called Born Again Murderer. That's a really, really good one.
I'm torn between like what'll I put on the hive / what'll I put here. So I've got like a really good story that'll make us all feel better about the fact that we can no longer travel ever, full stop. That's just over.
Gotcha.
Or I've got things. Do you remember back in 2015 when everyone was live tweeting everything?
Yes.
All the time. Hilarious woman live tweets plane hookup. Hilarious woman live tweets.
Some of
men
those
taking
were...
her bins out from under from her the front of her gaff. They were always oversold on fucking BuzzFeed or wherever.
Fair.
But there was a spate. It was just a rash of people endlessly live tweeting things. And I think people got it into their heads that the live tweeting was way more entertaining than it was. Anyway, I've gathered some vintage live tweets threads. So which do you guys want for now, basically? You guys tell
I
me.
I think
absolutely love a vintage thread.
Yeah, vintage live tweet. But we could probably get good mileage out of that for the Patreon.
Well, you guys tell yours. We'll see where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm excited. Heist and murder.
Let's kick off with murder, Cass.
Or it would be kick off with murder.
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 And I'm going to have to do it all in this calm, sultry tone. Yeah. So please, 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 we're in Sweden. Do not make a point of any of my pronunciation here. I am trying my absolute goddamn hardest.
Okay.
Okay.
We have Swedish listeners. I know it makes...
Yeah, and I know it makes no sense that I chose audio as the medium to make my money when I struggle to pronounce the most basic of phrases, but I'm trying.
Hamish.
Is it going to come up every fucking episode is all I want to know. Because if it is,
depends.
We can talk. Right, and if you don't get that reference, join our Patreon. God, I hate us. Anyway, we're in the quiet town of Nutby, Sweden. And Sweden, as you well know, is rarely rocked by scandal. In fact, in all of Sweden, the homicide rate is only about 1.1 per 100,000 people, which is very similar to Ireland. We have a homicide rate of about 0.87 per 100,000 people. So considering the size of the population, you're having the same kind of low crime, low murder lifestyle, which is a nice way to live. So on the 10th of January 2004, the town of Nutby, which was home to a Pentecostal Christian sect, was horrified when a 30-year-old IT entrepreneur called Daniel Lind was shot in the head and chest and seriously wounded. More terrifyingly, a few doors down from the Lind home, another victim, Alexandra Fossimo, had been murdered. She was not just a normal resident of Nutby, though. Alexandra Fossimo was the pastor's wife. The pastor, Helge Fossimo, had been called for when Daniel's body had been discovered around 4 a.m. So as the intruder entered his own home and shot Alexandra, Helge was in an ambulance with Daniel's bleeding body
oh
on the
God.
Way to the hospital.
Oh, no. And was this all near the church? Because I didn't...
I mean, the whole town revolves around the church.
Okay, like, grand. And when you say, you chose to call that church a sect, and I'm interested
as in the
in
Pentecostal
that.
Christian sect. Okay. As in, like, they're a group of, you know, the group of Pentecostal, kind of, not a cult, but no.
Feels cult adjacent, but I'm...
It is cult mantra. Adjacent.
Okay.
I think the
He's
official...
in the ambulance. This is terrifying.
Yeah. So he's in the ambulance as someone enters his home and shoots his wife. So Helge Fossimo had been a pillar of the community and had devoted his entire life to serving Jesus. Someone just walked into the hallway. I'm pretty sure I'm terrifying them with this.
Because so it sounds like you've just said, I'm devoting my entire life to serving Jesus.
Yeah.
Again.
Which was only
and
just
that
a
would
brief.
Be admirable if it wasn't for all the total fucksticks who've really given that a bad name.
Who knows? Jesus forgives. I might come back someday. So Helge had originated from Bjornberg. Helge's parents were Norwegian and the family were not particularly religious. So when he was about 10 years old, Helge joined a scouting organization in the Mission and Covenant Church in Bjornberg. And just before 12, he became a born-again Christian. So through his high school, he volunteered in a Christian youth cafe. And at 17, he met Helena Johnson, who would become his future wife. Then in 1989, they joined the Pentecostal Church. And Helena also was a member. So in 1997, Helge and Helena moved to the town of Nutby. There, and they had two children with them. There, Helge began working with another church leader, Asa Waldo, to develop a training program for Christians and build this kind of Pentecostal community. Then he and Helena had a third child in Nutby. And all was going well. But in 1999, there was a tragedy when Helge found Helena dead in the bathtub. And although there was a hole in her skull and there was a light amount of toxic concentration of dextropyrimidines in her blood, it was ruled an accident. Yeah. So within a few months, Helge was dating Alexandra, who had become his second wife.
Oh.
Alexandra. Yeah. Alexandra was the church leader, Asa's youngest sister. But around this time in 1999, a young woman named Sarah Svensson moved to Nuppi. Isn't that the most Swedish name you've ever heard? Sarah Svensson. She was 25 at the time. And when she arrived into the village, she got married. But the marriage dissolved after only about 2 years. She was seeking kind of comfort and guidance from the pastor, who was then 32. And Helge really liked her, so much so that he offered her a job as a nanny for his three children.
Hmm.
So within a couple of weeks...
You know when you like Helge, the look of a woman?
Mm, mm. Within a couple of weeks, Helge and Sarah were having an affair. And the pastor convinced the young woman that their actions were justified because they had they were experiencing this heavenly kind of love that God approved of.
Of course.
Yeah. However, their sort of love affair, dalliance, was thwarted when Helge was struck with a mystery illness that began affecting his delusions, and he began having uncontrollable fits, which he believed was the devil attempting to attack his soul. And he turned to Sarah for comfort, and Sarah seemed to be the only one who could calm him down. So she moved into his bedroom, and Alexandra, his wife, moved into the guest room.
Hmm.
Yeah. And Sarah would later say,
the shit you can get away with when you just say that, you know, it's cool, I ran it past Jesus, he has sanctioned this whole thing.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So Sarah would later say in court that each night they were winning a victory for God's will through sexual intercourse. No, this
that
sounds
was probably
really creepy,
a
the way
fucking really good
it.
Ride, though, let's say.
Yeah, riding the devil out of somebody.
Oh, yeah. Oh I love it.
God. Sorry, some bile rose in my throat there.
Has anyone ever seen Nymphomaniac?
Yes.
No. That's your homework for this week's Creep, lads.
Okay. So naturally the community of Christians were like, you can't do this. This is ridiculous. Like, you're blatantly having an affair. And they all turned against Sarah and shut her out from the community.
Oh yeah, so, never against the man, like.
No, and the pastor, like, he's like the most religious man. Yeah. But for her part, Sarah really believed that she was fulfilling the will of Jesus Christ. Like, she would later say that in the evenings, I was with the minister in the bedroom where we had a sexual relationship. Otherwise, my relationship was with him was that I was a slave and he was my master. I had no will of my own. During almost 2003, I was locked away because I was so incorrigible. God had turned his back on me and I sought mercy. So, isolated and vulnerable, Sarah believed that Helge was the only person in the world that loved her and he would be the key to her salvation. So when the pastor began telling Sarah that God had spoken to him, Sarah believed him. Now, I talk about this all the time because this is something that happened when we see it all the time in like religious stories gone awry, is that someone believes that God is speaking to them and has not yet acknowledged that these are just thoughts that they're having. They're just normal person thoughts. It is not the voice of Jesus Christ in their heads.
Mm.
But Sarah believed Helge when he said that God was speaking to him. And he said that God had special plans for Alexandra and wanted her in heaven with him. And he said to Sarah that when God contacts her, she should listen to him. And that God would basically be in touch. So a couple of days later,
his people are going to get in touch with your people.
Yeah. And he did. A couple of days later, Jesus Christ text Sarah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Because I was going to say, did it come in over the old waterproof Bluetooth headphone that she had in the shower, the head speaker? But then I realized it's the late 90s.
No, just a standard SMS.
Amazing.
Great coverage up in heaven. So Sarah received a series of text messages on her mobile phone claiming that she should kill Alexandra. And while she was at it, she should go down the road and also shoot Daniel Lind and kill him too. Jeez. So she did. But she didn't kill Daniel Lynch. She shot him in the face, but he survived. But on the 11th of January 2004, the day after the shooting, Sarah confessed her involvement to the police entirely. So police began investigating and discovered the relationship between Sarah and Helge, and also, unsurprisingly, that the messages to Sarah had been sent by Helge himself. 2 weeks later, Helge was arrested.
Do you think he went into her phone, so sorry, and in her contacts changed his name, Helge, from Helge to Jesus, like when she wasn't looking?
I think it was just like a classic, I had a burner phone and yeah, potentially put the name in as Jesus Christ Superstar and a little star or emoji after it.
Big JC.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ.
So 2 weeks later, Helge was arrested, as was Daniel Lynn's wife. So Helge and Daniel Lynn's wife had also just been having an affair. But she was later released with no charge and had been found to have no involvement with the murder.
Oh my God.
So at the trial, Sarah Svensson gave a detailed confession. She told the court that she had been influenced by the text messages that were forwarded to her by Helge. Her credibility was strengthened in a string of erased text messages that were recovered from her mobile phone. So on the 30th of July 2004, the sentencing here has been quite controversial. Helge was sentenced to life in prison for instigating murder and instigating a murder attempt. However, when the trial was going on, they revisited the fact that his first wife had also died in suspicious circumstances, and they brought that forward as a charge. Now, he was acquitted of that murder, but it is well believed that he did in fact also kill his first wife. The reopening of the investigation found that there was no way she could have sustained her head injury and hole in her skull
the head
from a casual fall. Yeah, that she had to been hit with something, but I guess they had no way of proving that it was
maybe
him
she
after
fell
all that time.
At speed on a bullet.
Or maybe, yeah, she was like brutally beaten by someone who's instigated murder in the name of Jesus Christ. So he was not convicted for killing his first wife, but he was sentenced to life in prison for instigating murder and instigating murder attempt. And Sarah Svensson was sentenced to institutionalized psychiatric care. So throughout his trial, Helge pleaded his innocence. But in a dramatic twist, in 2006, the pastor admitted his involvement during a TV interview on TV4. And he said, "I feel that I have recovered. I lived a lie and I don't want to do that any longer," he said as an explanation for giving the confession all of a sudden. And he also said that there were several other people involved in the crime, although prosecutors denied that there was any other suspects. In 2007, Helge married in prison, of course.
Of course. Never a prob for these guys.
No, never. And in 2014, after serving 10 years of his life sentence, he applied to the court for his sentence to be reduced, which meant that he'd be eligible for parole in 2020. But in 2015, they repealed that decision, saying that he has to serve at least 24 years of imprisonment. But like, he'd be close to 28, I think, is 24 years imprisonment.
Oh my God. It's not long enough.
No.
For fuck's sake.
Yeah. So in January 2010, a Swedish newspaper reported that Sarah had begun college in another city. So she basically went through psychiatric care and it became more and more, not lenient isn't the right word. She obviously went through treatment, recovered, and was given more and more freedom until it's presumed that she returned to society sometime in 2010. But thankfully, under Swedish law, you can't disclose any of the details of someone who's been treated in psychiatric care upon their release.
Do we know what kind of age she was when she fell under his sway?
Oh, 25.
Very
she was 25
nice.
When they met. Mm. She was 26 when the murder occurred.
It's just like, it must be unimaginable to have grown up like very, you know, devout and with a lot of faith, and then to be told by your pastor like that you have to do all this stuff. And it's just it's so insidious, such horrible insidious abuse.
But like,
and oh my God, the level of self-serving of that man. Jesus.
Disgusting.
Yeah. But like, he's her pastor. He's her boss.
Yeah.
He's,
oh, yeah.
You know, she's working for him. Then
he's basically middle management, and the Lord and Jesus are the C level. You know,
where's HR?
They're the CEO.
Is what I want to know.
CFO. And then
HR is like Mary, but the Pentecostals don't believe in Mary. They don't believe in the saints.
Bingo. So
don't
there is
the bureaucracy of the saints.
That's very interesting.
No,
the Pentecostals don't believe in Mary.
Do they not?
Pentecostals and when I was a born again Christian, I was a cross between a Pentecostal and an evangelist, and we didn't pray to the saints. We acknowledged their existence, but not that they needed to come before Jesus. So saints are quite a I think they're like quite a not solely Catholic, but like it's a definitely a Roman thing. Whereas like the more fundamentalist Christian sects believe in a direct line to Jesus Christ, that you would pray directly to Jesus and God and receive your words and wisdom from them. So they don't have holy days or like saints holidays and things like that. It's all about the two main boyos.
That's interesting. I must ask, one of my uncles is born again, and I tend to try and avoid the topic with him, but maybe I should ask him a bit about it someday.
There's interesting hybrids, you know, like we were,
like he's Californian born again, so I imagine that's kind of like a hydroponic version of born again, maybe,
or something with the juice cleanse.
Yeah.
There's different, because there's like born agains who like completely disregard, not disregard, but like who believe every word of the Old Testament, which, you know,
that's
you cannot
take
literally.
That's very interesting, because that's very but like Judaism.
Yeah, but then it gets to a point where it's like disregarded. It's acknowledged, believed, and then inconsequential in how you live your life because Jesus died for all our sins. So after that, it's completely fine.
So what's
but do
that's
not sin.
Interesting. So what's the point then? It's just like we know
what's
this happened.
Point?
We believe that that's in the past. But thank God for
but we
Jesus.
Don't live. We don't live our lives by the rules of the Old Testament. Like
well, in
a lot
fairness,
of the
some
Old
of the rules
Testament
of the Old
where,
Testament, like that God like doesn't chime with the New Testament God as much. Like it's
no.
like, you know, God, if he was a character in a novel, you'd be like, not believable, because why does this character, why is he suddenly behaving in all these very different ways between one and the other?
Is it like
what do you
when
think, Cass? You're more well versed than me, but like God
yeah, well,
in the
like
New Old Testament is very kind of, he's a harsh guy.
Well, biblical, well no, but like biblical God as a whole is like a God, like you should be a God fearing person. Like he's not the, like long
friend.
Bearded nice guy, like he's smites people, you know, he the rules of the Old Testament are probably, to see them reflected in any religion be hard to pinpoint, but like the, you know, the man should walk in front of his wife kind of thing, thou shalt not eat shellfish, we're all an abomination, like
prove yourself to me, kill
you
son.
Can't wear cloths of two woven fibers, all that kind of bizarre stuff that's impossible to live your life by. But that the Old Testament stuff is where people have found license for modern day hate. Like that's where the homophobia is. That's where the misogyny is. That's where the difference and, you know, all that kind of, that's where the Ten Commandments are. So, yeah, it's an interesting
very,
thing for
very interesting
religion
Cass.
to take those rulings. But a lot of born again Christians, a lot of, I suppose, born again hybrid Christians, believe, you know, live their lives more by the teachings of Jesus rather than the Old Testament. Still very interesting. Not trying to convert anybody. I am not a Christian. I don't participate in organized religion, but it is something to be understood.
I have my very special disorganized religion that's very fun. It's
good.
You know, it's like a pick and mix.
Just something new every day.
I have a pencil
just whatever
case
I'm
that my cousin
like.
Gave me that says stay in your magic. And it's got crystals. It's got AA pamphlets. It's got a meditation. It's got some aphorisms. It's got a prayer to God.
Well,
whatever gets you through. That story was wild. I have never heard the like of it. That's brilliant, Cassie. Thank you.
So there is a HBO documentary that was released yesterday called... Pray, Obey, Kill. Great title.
Oh my God, amazing.
Great title.
I wonder if it's going to come to Sky Atlantic.
Probably.
Although
you sound
some reviews so bored by that question.
I read some reviews that said, don't bother with it.
I think the HBO, as me, a person, a completely anonymous, you know, person, I think if HBO is looking for some feedback, things are sliding over there a little bit. I think so. I thought the Nexium doc was about 4 episodes too long.
Absolutely.
We're getting a lot of that these days, though.
Tighten her up. Okay, well, Jen, come on. Them. Speaking of tighten her up.
Speaking of docuseries, I've got another one for you. I watched the first episode of this last night. It was sensational. It's sensational. And I recommend it for all of us. It's exactly what we like. It's a nice mystery with, you know, light on the murder, but heavy on the weirdness. This is all about an art heist. So the series is called This Is a Robbery. And it's a fucking must watch. So I'm one episode in and I was like, what is this? How have I never heard about this? It's amazing, right? It took place, this heist, in 1990. And it in this museum that I had also never heard of, called the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, which is in Boston. And it's fucking amazing. So from the outside, looks very ordinary, like 5 or 6 story building. Okay, but then you go in and it's kind of a replica of a Renaissance balconied. So there's an atrium in the center of the building and it's just jam packed full of this lady, Isabella Stewart Gardner's American collection of, it's not American, her collection of art, which was, we're talking Rembrandts, Vermeers, absolutely amazingly valuable, and it's an amazing museum. So she died, left all her shit to the public of Boston, and this is her museum, which she did build as well. And it's absolutely an amazing museum. You go in, all the rooms are sort of like living rooms, all in, you know, all of, I don't know what era, but it's unlike a kind of sterile museum that you might think of in your mind. It's a total experience situation, yeah. Right?
So it's a, kind of like immersive, like they've recreated her kind of,
her whatever,
the way she would have housed it.
Exactly, with the way the original pieces would have been housed at the time, okay, that they were, yeah, being painted. So the year is 1990. And it is St. Patrick's Day. So we're rolling on into the evening. We're in Boston.
Keeping the religion.
A shitload, yeah, of Irish people. It's a huge, big party night. St. Paddy's Day. There's beads flying everywhere. Shot glasses hanging off necklaces. Bits of green shite floating everywhere. And it's a hoodie, right?
I just hate,
right,
it so much as a day.
It's, I know. Best. It's very depressing, especially in a kind of an Americanized version, because it just boils us all down to drunken assholes. We are those things, but we're so much
only
more.
Sometimes.
Only on sometimes. Thursdays. Just not of a Thursday. So anyway, so we're 1990. It's about, well, I can give you the exact time. So we're at midnight, okay? So the art museum is obviously closed, but it has a security team. The security team consists of 2 very young men and sort of hippie type guys. You know, this one particular guy goes by the name Rick Abbott. Okay, visualize this. Extremely long, nipple length, very curly brown hair. Slender gentleman with a crocheted bum bag.
Oh, stunning.
Age 23, music school dropout. Really nice, gorgeous guy. But, you know, heading up the security of the of this particular museum of valuables.
Such a bizarre choice for this role.
Such a bizarre choice, I agree, so.
Get but HR part, on the phone.
But part of the weird choice might have been that this kind of, there was just no way they expected a heist. Like, I'd say the 3 of us could have gotten into this place with relative ease. Okay, so here's the scene. St. Patrick's Day, St. Patrick's evening. A lot of shit going on in terms of noise, people walking by. It's 12 at night. People are starting to go home, but there's kind of like activity in the streets. There's 2 security guards. Our guy, Richard, has just finished his round and he's relieved the other guy, whose name I can't remember. And so he's back in his hut. And there's like a security hut and the other guy's just doing the rounds, as in walking around the museum. Ding dong on the little intercom. And he says, wonder who that is. Presses the button, little screen lights up and it's 2 guardie outside. And they say to him, hello, sir, we've gotten a report of a disturbance. Oh, let us in now. right? So the two lads come into sort of the lobby area before the security hut.
And yeah, I'm picturing legitimate Gardaí, by the way. They're not, yeah?
Well, they're police, as it turns out, well, they're dressed very like policemen, but surprise, they're not. So anyway, so Richard says in this interview he did with moviemaker.com, I could see on the security camera that it looked like two cops just standing out there. They came into the door, they rang the bell, they said, Boston police, we got a report of some disturbance on the premises. So I buzzed them in. So there's a very good sense that Richard was high. He didn't say he was, but there's a feeling of marijuana about him. And so his retelling of what happened, you know yourself. Anyway, they asked me if I was alone, he says. I said, no, my partner was off doing the rounds. They said, get him down here. Then one of the cops turned to me and said, don't I know you? Don't I recognize you from somewhere? I think there's a warrant out for your arrest. Can you step out from behind the desk now?
And then he said,
up against the wall. And so Richard is up against the wall, right? And at that point, one of the other guard said, gentlemen, this is a robbery.
Yes! Okay? Iconic.
So the two security guards are at this point duct taped. Now, I have to share with you what... Let me get my screen back. I'll have to look at myself here again. Oh, gross. I'm going to put a picture up behind me of the type of, let's see, what do you call it? Duct taping that happened to Richard. When eventually, I'll get to this point, when they were found in the basement, alive, both security guards. This is how Richard looked. Is this right? Oh yeah, hang on. I'll get out of the way here. Do you see what I'm saying there?
Jesus, Richard.
So Richard has what can be described as an elaborate Halloween costume.
To get back off.
Absolutely.
He looks
murder.
Like Jesus at a stag.
Totally. So the guards, when they found him, I should start going.
He does have the most luscious kind of Jesus-y hair.
At a stag. Right. So anyway, when they were found,
the apostles have just really fucked one over on Jesus.
So this is how. This is how Richard was found later on by the police. Poor I should stop calling them guards. But the police, and they're interviewed in this first episode of this Netflix series, and they say, very unusual use of masking tape. Basically, is what the police
say. Do you
know
what he looks like, actually? He looks like me wrapping up the Creep of the Week mugs to send out. That's what your mug would look like if it arrives to your house. Jesus' head wrapped in masking tape.
Right. So, right. These guys, security guys, the two 20 odd year olds with the, you know, crocheted bum bags down in the basement with Art Attack masking tape action. So meanwhile, back upstairs, the two policemen robbers get to work. Right. And it is fucking interesting the way they approach this heist. So, let me just get here. So basically, they got away with 13 pieces of art valued at about $200 million at the time dollars. That's now worth about $500 million, $500 million. So we're talking Rembrandts, Degas, Manets. But what's so strange about the way they did this were, okay, they knew where they were going. They went to an area called the Dutch Room. That, of course, was all the Dutch masters. So that's all the fucking pricey gear. You know yourself, you know, all that kind of good gear. So they go up, they go straight to the Dutch master's room and they get to work. But what was so fucking weird about the way they took down, so they took down these huge paintings. One, I think it's Rembrandt's, the only seascape he did. So I think it was the most valuable piece they took. And it is fucking huge. And they took what they presume is just a scalpel. And instead of clicking kind of the pieces out of the frame, they just cut them out, right?
Yeah.
And there's a suggestion there that they thought that they maybe could roll them. Do you know what I'm saying? Which, of course, you can't because they're cracky. Stiff and cracky. Yeah. So, so there's a feeling from what the robbers have left behind that they didn't really know what they were doing at all. So
Remind us, was this in the early 90s?
This was 1990.
Because do you remember the original Batman?
Yes.
I feel like there was a robbery, an art robbery in that where they did scalpel out the paintings and roll them up. And I was like, maybe that was their, maybe that was the extent of their research. They were like, oh yeah, we'll just do it like the way they did in Batman. Maybe
you would sort of, that it, that could
the timeline
be the case.
Might not line up. I must, I kind of,
so I'll tell you about the timeline.
Anyway,
they were in there for 80 minutes, which is a fucking long ass time. And also, so the whole first episode of this series is sort of, it's setting us up for kind of a few different potential outcomes here. Basically, these pieces of art were never found, which is fucking interesting as well, because they were so valuable and so iconic. There's just no way they could have reappeared on the market for sale. Right.
Mm.
Which might suggest that maybe they were stolen, you know, with a somebody with a shopping list. So a very, very wealthy individual with a taste for the Dutch masters sent these fucking lads out on a mission. OK, but again, that doesn't necessarily hold up because there has not been a fucking whisper of even a single one of these pieces since. So even if you were some kind of, like they described it in the show as like a Bond supervillain who just had a basement full of these masterpieces that he would, you know, self-flagellate in front of and never tell a soul. Like, it's very unlikely that somebody wouldn't dob him in because wait for this.
Or that he'd resist putting them on Instagram.
Well, like, that exactly. So you just have to gloat on one level.
You
and if you even did a shadow of gloating, that person you gloated to would initially be up for $1 million, no questions asked, award for information, which by now, in this year of our Lord 2021, you would get 10 million quid for no questions asked information.
My God.
So that means that theory sort of out the fucking window. So the guards were called, sorry, I keep saying the police, the Boston police were called, and they were like, this is out of our league. We need the FBI. FBI arrive and start looking into what the fuck happened here. So the first episode definitely is suggesting to us that our much loved Jesus on a stag had something to do with this, right? Richard, right, before he did his round, before at the end of his round, before he relieved the other guy, he went down and opened the outside door. We don't know why, okay? But that was a weird move. Maybe he was going out for a smoke. We don't know. And then went back to his post. 10 minutes later, two fake guards arrive. So we're thinking, Richard, what the fuck is this about? Here's another thing about Richard, whatever his name is. I think all of the theft happened in one room, the Dutch master's room. There was one other piece, the other end of the gallery, that was stolen. And there's kind of various trip alarms, and they were back in the 90s here, so there's no we don't have kind of,
it's not like
don't have
Mission
any,
Impossible.
It's not like Mission Impossible, but what they did have was some kind of, so they had the security VHS tapes running that was taken by the robbers. They had another type of security, which was movement, a kind of alarm attached to the frames, and that would send back to what looked like a fax machine, and that would live print out these reams of paper, and they would kind of log the times and dates of when shit was moved. Now, the robbers ripped the paper off as they were taking the VHS. But what they didn't know was that the hard drive on that thing was also recording the events. So that's how we know this piece on the other end of the gallery was moved. And the timing wise doesn't quite line up. So it's looking a bit like Richard might have taken that.
Third person.
We don't know. And that would suggest he was in cahoots with the two guards. And also the weird, elaborate kind of, no, absolutely no harm came to the two lads in the basement. Like, why the fuck wouldn't you just kill them? You're stealing 200 million euros worth of art. Why do you give a shit about the lives of these two men who could potentially identify you because they've seen your fucking face? So that, all that shit sort of hovering around the air in the first episode. They're also, they also, so obviously FBI get involved and they're like, right, who's in the area? Is there anyone with kind of history of theft of art? And I tell you, they interview in the documentary, and the guards talk about probably the most exciting villain, art villain I've ever seen. Let me get his proper name up here. So there's a couple of, like, his name is Miles Connor. Right, he's a local art thief, believe it or not, who had actually stolen a Rembrandt before. Now, Miles it is just this fucking amazing Renaissance criminal man. His dad was a policeman. His half-brother was also a policeman. His other brother was a priest. And then there was Miles. Miles was in Mensa. He had this amazing musical career. He was like this fucking rock and roll guy. He was only like 5 foot nothing. This little genius guy, okay? Like Del Boy. So they were like, this has got fucking Miles written all over it. But Miles had an alibi. He was in jail already. So they were like, but it just smacks of Miles. So Miles was actually interviewed in the first episode of this. And it is probably, it's just amazing. You got to get in. So we're only at the beginning. There's a load of other theories to come further down the line. But the bottom line here is we're going to get wrapped up, I think, later on in mob action. And there's also a connection to Dublin from an IRA kind of. Now, no more spoilers, but that's just the top line. I'm absolutely betting. But here's where we stand now. There's a 10 million quid reward for any information on this shit. This guy, Colin Barnacle, is the guy who made this Netflix series, and he's been working on this series for 10 years. He grew up down the road. He was only 4 when the heist happened, but he's absolutely played a blinder with the interviews. He obviously knows, he's just working perfectly, right? And he's also hoping that this series sort of jogs something loose, right? Oh, it's also terrible because it's great, but there was a lady interviewed. She was the director of the gallery. She had only been the director for 6 months when this fucking heist happened. She was the first female director of the gallery as well. So it was a big gig. And then this fucking shit happens. And the media just went for her, right? First question.
For fuck's sake.
Exactly. What are you doing hiring this Richard guy with a goddamn bun bag at the age of 23 to mind this incredible, incredibly valuable collection? And she was like, I didn't even know who this kid is. I'm here 6 months.
Anyway, that's definitely not the right answer to give to that question, though.
I know. She was just like, I don't know.
Jesus, I said, that's fine. He's a good guy. Must be a good guy.
But she obviously was devastated. Well, she just couldn't believe it. One more thing they took, which I thought was interesting. Oh, yeah. They were doing all, so they got the Vermeers, they've got a self, they didn't match it, right, guys? So you know how I was talking about that seascape, the storm on the Sea of Galilee. Sorry, that was Vermeer. Huge big piece that it looks like they just scalpeled out of the frame, which sort of implies like that they didn't have time. So they did that, but then they also found this very tiny, it's about the postage stamp sized print of, I think it's a self-portrait of, who the fuck, Rembrandt or something, right? I'm getting that wrong, I know I am, but it doesn't matter. That's not the point. They clipped out this tiny postage stamp. They carefully removed the back of it. So they had this, why the fuck did they do that with this way less valuable piece and just scalpel? So it looks like at some point, right, they reckon that the lads had police scanners with them because, you know, they were there 80 minutes, but there was obviously a skirmish and they rushed to leave thinking they were going to be caught or they picked something up on the radio. In doing so, they were just kind of pocketing things as they were coming out. And they took, there was a flag, a Napoleonic flag. And they took this, what do they call it? I can't remember the name of it. But basically it's like a bronze eagle that sits atop. So it's not the interesting thing about the flag. It's like the bit on top. Pocketed that,
it's like the
legged it out.
Little holder kind of topper.
But it's fucking, it is very, very interesting. Anyway,
like taking the little plastic podium that the Hope Diamond is sitting on.
Exactly. So the Netflix series is called This Is a Robbery. And this, you got to get in. Get in.
It sounds brilliant.
It really
on
is.
On this, have you ever read The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt?
No, I've heard of it.
Absolutely brilliant book. And it's like about the kind of central character when he's very young, steals this incredible piece of art. And it's just fascinating because it's really, it goes very into this world of like, you know, dealing art, dealing antiques, the kind of nefarious methods and modes and the kind of underbelly of it all. And
oh, I love it.
It's such a good book. Like, it's brilliant.
I love it. And that's a real, like, you know, the underbelly meets the highest echelons of, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's a real fuck you to the system. So it's absolutely brilliant. I love it.
And
all.
Also, like, it's so interesting because all art is stolen more or less, like, from the cultures that it, you know, it's originated from.
That's true.
You know, just everything.
Look at the British Museum.
Marbles. Yes. Just like the absolute pillaging of the art of other countries mm-hmm. is, you know, a tradition for centuries. Mm-hmm. It's mad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But
would
all
recommend.
Under, as you say,
love
the
it.
Kind of veneer of respectability.
That's it.
You know?
It's juicy.
It's juicy. I thought was incredible.
Absolutely brilliant.
Will I do a little couple of, you know, live tweets that really weren't as funny as the authors fucking thought?
Yeah.
To see us out? Okay. So when do you think, okay, first off, when do you think the very first incident of somebody live tweeting an event happened?
Hmm. 1984.
I don't know. Pretty early on into Twitter's birth, I presume.
Like, I think, would we say that we're kind of correct in saying that, like, the live tweeting was really the bread and butter of, like, 2015?
Okay.
2016.
Oh, yes, correct.
Yeah. That's when they were always kind of like, someone live tweeted a bakery fire and it was hilarious. Oh, fucking hell. Anyway. The first live tweeting incident I found was in 2008.
Oh, much later.
Oh, that's only like 2 years into Twitter.
Much earlier, yeah. And it's kind of bad. Like, in terms of, like, think about taking the medium and immediately taking it to the worst fucking place you can possibly imagine to bring it. This journalist live tweeted the funeral of a child.
Oh my God.
In Colorado. And he did it from his newspaper's Twitter account.
What a fucking moron. So he basically
took it upon himself to go to the memorial service of a 3-year-old child who had died tragically when a pickup truck crashed into an ice cream shop. Like, fucking hell.
What could be, where's the interest? I mean, obviously it's incredibly sad and sad for the family, but why?
Well, like, a journalist would attend something like that, but usually there'd be an agreement, you know, with the family, for example, that, like, journalists might wait outside if they're going to be there or something like that.
What an idiot.
But he went and he decided, I'm gonna use this new microblogging service called Twitter. And he obviously took, you know, the idea of the live Twitter thread, a burgeoning idea at the time, to a very low depth.
And how was it received?
And, oh my God. So at the time, right, this is interesting. At the time, there was like 2.9 million Twitter users, so 3 million, as opposed to, like, I guess right now there might be about 2 million Twitter users in Ireland alone, like, mm-hmm. you know the way. And so this piece that I was reading about, it was like really laying out Twitter for the reader, which is really funny. So it was like, Twitter's users update as they go about their daily lives. From their cell phones, members can send, quotation marks, tweets, 140 character real time messages about their plans for the day, people they just encountered, or simply what they ate for lunch. It's so kind of adorable that this is what, like, early Twitter was, or certainly what it was perceived as. And so then, you know, this journalist's decision to microblog the child's funeral, pretty fucking horrific. I think some of the quotes, though, despite the horrific nature of this live thread, the quotes about Twitter that I really enjoy. So one person is like, an actor from the area was quoted as saying, not sure if she'd use Twitter to cover the event, but didn't see a major difference between, and this is how the newspaper has put it, Twittering the event and writing about it later. I love that. I'm sad that Twittering never came up on and never kind of, you know, became part of the vernacular.
Just didn't stick.
Very sad. But anyway, I mean, all things considered, you know, it was basically like, no, this is highly uncalled for. Don't do this. So, cut to like 5-6 years later, people are live tweeting all over the shop. Like, okay, so in 2014, one of the original Twitter employees live tweeted her birth. So you know the way all the originals on Twitter, they're just like at...
just at name.
Yeah, at Claire. Yeah. What's the founder again? At...
Jack Dorsey.
Jack. At Jack, yeah. And so anyway, she's at Claire. And she did what has to be one of the most tedious and boring live tweets of labor that's ever, ever been committed to the internet. Honestly, she doesn't deserve her at Claire. Somebody needs to give her at Claire to at Tyra. Do you remember that amazing woman who live tweeted her labor alone in the hotel bathroom a few years later?
Oh my God, yes.
Anyway, yes. So this like live tweeted birth was like a world first in 2014, apparently. She literally is like never misses an opportunity for a bit of product placement. She tweets, contractions 5 minutes apart, my at Twitter jacket on, headed to hospital, hashtag in labor. And she's got this like really irritating kind of like utility anorak that's like branded at Twitter at Claire on her back. Painful. I don't know why the anorak element bothering me so intensely, but also just this is really, really a boring ass labor. I can't believe somebody could take labor and actually make it boring, but this Twitter thread does. Moving on. Okay, so everyone remembers Plain Bay, I presume.
No.
Do you guys not?
It's ringing a few bells.
This is interesting. Okay, so hashtag Plain Bay
went viral.
And it was all like this one woman was live tweeting the two people in front of her on the plane having like a cute meet and falling for each other.
Oh, okay? I remember this. Yes.
Yes. And so at the beginning of it, this woman, Rosie, who is the tweeter, had asked to switch seats with a woman behind her so that she could sit with her boyfriend back there. And the woman moved into Rosie's seat in front of them. And Rosie sort of said, oh, maybe like your new seat partner will be the love of your life. And then the next thing was that the two of them in front of Rosie and her boyfriend actually started to seem like they were getting along. And so they started kind of like live tweeting it. And she's got updates like, guess what? They have been talking nonstop since we took off. They're both personal trainers. They have touched arms a few times. They're both vegetarians. And so it goes on. She's like updating, updating all along. No one's ordered drinks yet, but they are sharing a cheese board, a protein board. And all of the imagery is photographs taken through the plane seats. So all you can see of these people is like their ear and their shoulder. And she's kind of like, she's transcribing their conversation. So she's got like him, this is my mom. Her, OMG, your mom is so hot. Next, pictures of Rosie and her boyfriend just listening, saying this is compelling stuff. And she's now offering her take on the encounter. So she said, important detail. This plane has no AC. The flight attendants keep handing out water. I'm doing a really obnoxious American voice and I'm enjoying
it. It's very convincing.
Handing out water. Why would you sit closer to your seat partner unless you want a smooch? Okay, so Rosie is like really projecting, okay? Now the hashtag Plane Bay is starting to gain momentum online. And Rosie is resharing like loads of people's reactions to what's going on in real time. And she's saying on her story, I wish these people knew how many people are rooting for them. We've got one woman, got my Diet Coke and heading to the break room at work for this. So like people are now tuning in real time, sharing their own reaction faces. So Rosie has tweeted, she just put her hand on his shoulder for like a second. And then this other woman called For Beck's Sake, which is a great handle, has shared her own like, ooh, get it, girl. So the hand on the shoulder gesture, major, caused ructions. Okay, Rosie's updating us. They just started talking about what they want out of life. Marriage, kids, etc. He says he's been too dedicated to his fitness to pursue relationships. That's all I got. Now they're talking so quiet. Okay, so she's listening.
You are well done on alienating all of our American listeners.
Everyone, guys, love you. I just feel like this thread is nothing without me being super obnoxious as well. Okay, she has taken the stalking out of the plane. People apparently concerned that they were going to not get closure on this anecdote. And Rosie's talking to them saying, don't worry, I'm following the story to baggage claim. I will have answers for you. Next shot. She is behind them walking through the airport as they just wheel their little wheelie suitcases. She's just captioned it, OM fucking J. They're still walking together. So then they finally got one half of the Plain Bay couple. Okay, the final installment from Rosie and her boyfriend was that they discovered that the Plain Bay couple began following each other on social media, and they both live in the same city. Okay, so then Plain Bay man, right? So the man of the couple. We learn that his name is Holden. And so he sees the whole thread, recognizes himself, and starts tweeting using the hashtag catching flights and feelings. Okay. So I guess that's his way of being like, yep, liked that. And he then, like, you know, he's into fitness. He's pushing his own thing, you know, struggling actor, also looking for clients. Starts to really lean into being one half of Plain Bay. Mm-hmm. So much so that Holden, Rosie, and her boyfriend all appear on the Today Show.
Hilarious.
The other half of Plain Bay, the woman who has been identified only as Helen, has asked, but I imagine fucking begged to remain anonymous. She was stalked all over the internet, having her entire plane journey be chronicled for strangers against her will without her permission. And I think it's probably been a massive fucking ball ache for her. So that was Plain Bay. They all had, they dined out on that for, you know, hot 15 minutes, as is the kind of, you know, norm. But it definitely threw up some, like, I suppose, ethical issues about, you know, whether live tweeting events happening around you was a fair thing to do or not.
Yeah, I think anything that involves taking pictures or commenting on other people's actions and publishing them on the internet is ethically immoral.
Very dubious. In fact, all the way over into immoral. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear a couple more? There is Plain Bay, the breakup version. So this this was in 2015.
Here we are being like, this is completely immoral, but give me more.
But give us. So this happened in 2015, and this was a woman who decided, I mean, imagine witnessing a couple breaking up across the aisle from you on a delayed flight, right? So this was a fucking grounded flight. They hadn't taken off yet, but no, like, you know, they were in that horrific, you know, that 40 minutes of waiting on the tarmac. And you see some harrowing shit going down. You're like, I must chronicle this for strangers. So anyway, this woman, Kelly Keeks, hey guys, tweets out, this guy on the plane just broke up with his girlfriend and she is sobbing. And this is accompanied by a picture taken across a plane aisle of a, you can see this guy kind of slumped in a t-shirt, looking a bit like, ugh, can't believe I have to do this. And a woman, like, kind of crouched on her seat, like she's pulled her knees up, arms around her face, like, clearly.
That's terrible.
Just a such a sad, dejected, defensive position. Tweet has 12,500 hearts. Why? Here we go, Kelly Keeks. She's providing the actual dialogue. Guy, I just can't stand you. I can't be near you. I would switch seats if I could. Guy continued,
Is this really a surprise? Are you seriously surprised at this information? Girl. Great. Just great. I'm so glad I paid $40 extra to be on this fucking flight with you. Guy. I don't care. Girl. I'm glad you don't care. Girl. It's just so mean. Do I deserve this? Why are you bringing this up? I don't want to be this girl. I don't want to be her. I want to be my best for you and you won't let me. Is that what you're starting to do with me? Just slow fade me out, just like the others. Oh, how fucking relatable is this, by the way? Kelly Keyes interjects, this is the greatest plane delay I've ever had. Oh my God. I mean, think it, but don't say it and don't tweet it to 2,000 likers on the internet. Girl,
oh God,
you don't even understand why I'm fucking sad. You hate everything about me. Girl, why is this so easy for you? It's just that fucking easy. What do you want from me? Guy, you need to calm down. In fact, he's American, oh, so hang on. You need to calm down. Girl.
Sophie, that sounded the exact same.
No, no, no. Americans pronounce the L in calm. They say calm. Calm.
Calm.
Do you hear it? You need to listen to Oprah's Super Soul Sundays to understand this. Calm. Okay. You need to calm down. Girl, to me, I just really thought, you know, this was going to go somewhere. Kelly Keegs interjects to explain that there is now loud sobs. Oh my God. Now she's shared another picture. And the picture shows the guy still kind of slumped and uncomfortable. Girl still has knees up on the chair. She's kind of looking away and she's definitely obviously trying to compose herself in this horrific scenario. Kelly Keegs has tweeted, few stoic minutes here. Okay, girl says, well, what makes you so fucking special? Girl, you should probably just stop talking. Just stop talking. I'm going to ask Charlotte. This is the girl speaking. I'm going to ask Charlotte. I'm going to ask her the minute we get home and you'll see. We'll see if your stories match. So Kelly Keegs is like, OMG scandal, who's Charlotte? Guy, I can't discuss this anymore. Girl, so I'm not worth your time. Kelly Keegs has let us know that there are silent sobs and lots of sniffling. Kelly Keegs update. What the fuck? Now they're making out. I'm not kidding. She goes on to say, we took off. They immediately ordered 6 vodkas and Bloody Mary mix for the 50-minute flight and chugged them in silence between makeouts.
What?
Roller coaster.
The ultimate fate of this couple, we will never know, except that they consumed 6 vodkas and a Bloody Mary in under 50 minutes and turned a very embarrassing public breakup into a disgusting public sex session.
Do you even call that public display of affection? It's more like public display of, I don't know, detest.
Obviously, Plain Bay and, no, sorry, hashtag Plain Breakup trended massively and Kelly Keegs gained 7,000 followers from the entire thing. There is numerous first dates that were live tweeted, okay? I feel like we've gone very long. I could do my last 2 live tweets over on the Hive if we like. Will we do that?
Yeah, bring them to the Hive.
Bring them to the Hive. So for the ones that nothing I'm going like to do on the Hive engine are... a hellish date that takes place in a Japanese restaurant. And like some of these fucking headlines really do overstate it, but this one really is pretty hellish. It is worth it. It's a good listen. There is also another overheard breakup, this time on a rooftop, that I really enjoyed. And then I think probably the cherry on top, the man who live tweeted his roommate murdering her boyfriend.
Oh God.
Okay, we'll see you on the Hive.
Can't wait.
Visit
you all.
Patreon.com/thecreekdive if you want to join.
That's where you'll find an unbelievable volume of too much stuff.
Too much.
Look, we're
quantity
never not too
over
much
quality.
We'll see you next week and we'll see you on Thursday for the Hive. Bye.
Thank you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.